Did you see this helicopter video? Nice.
Yes.
This guy's just waiting for his instructor, and he decides to take off anyway.
And he gets maybe 10 feet off the ground.
Yeah, probably 20. But then he's spinning around and crashes, bounces. The helicopter is still running for a while, but it's completely busted and destroyed.
What's going on, Jim?
He's just learning how to fly this helicopter. He hasn't had any time, and he just bought it. He owns the helicopter, and he just ate the big one. He was told not to try to fly the thing. I was leaving.
Has he been checked on that car?
No, I don't think so. Not at all. Hog, are you all right?
Hog.
Hog, get away from that thing. Just get away from it.
I'm taking over the podcast, and all sound effects will be kittens. I mean, who doesn't like kittens? Or cat fights.
Cat fights?
Yeah. Like a scary cat fight. Oh, it's 32 seconds. That kind of sounded like Teen Wolf, didn't it? Like about...
Try another one. Try Angry Cat.
Angry Cat. Today, when I was driving home, there was this cat, like, just straight up standing in the middle of the street. And I got closer and closer, and it wasn't moving. It was just, like, literally standing in the middle of the street. And I looked over, and its buddy was on the other side of the street, and they were playing around. And I had to kind of beat my horn and be like, "Cat, get out of the road!" And it was like, "Okay." And it trotted off to the other side. But, you know, cats, they're so ballsy, you know? They don't mess around. They're just lovers, really. So. Come back to drugs.
Yeah, why not?
Hey, how are you, boys?
Pretty good.
What are you up to?
Pretty good.
Hey, do you want to try something?
Oh, yeah, man, I'll have a go.
Nah, mate, I've got enough troubles in my life, I don't add drugs to it.
No worries, I was only joking anyway.
I was only joking.
Hey babe, can't wait for the party tonight.
I want to pick up my fucking glasses. I'm a bit tired, I might not go out after the
party. So go to the party, have some pills. It'll give you a buzz. It'll make you feel better.
What? I'm good enough for that shit.
Come on babe, you'll love it.
No, I'm going, but I'm going to have fun without sweating, spewing, stressing out after it. I don't need that. It's not worth it, babe.
Oh, come on, this is bullshit.
Don't worry about it.
So what is passed out on the floor?
Big Mark OD!
What? Yeah, sorry, I'm doing a lot of drugs earlier today. What are we gonna do?
Oh shit,
more drugs.
They're Australian for sure.
I'll call 000 and get an ambulance.
Triple
000.
Yeah.
There's no crisp.
If you think someone's overdosed, put them in the recovery position and call 000.
It's like you got a problem with concentration.
It's like the spike energy is high. Oh my god, stop! Oh my god, no! Oh, don't touch me!
I'm gonna call the police. We can't keep her safe. It's not safe to be around here.
It's over. What are you doing, mate? Broken up with Laura. What? It's too much trouble.
He texted her to break up. That's weak.
Oh my god, I really did stuff up last weekend. He dumped me. We're out of control. You really need help. I didn't even do anything that bad.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, she really needs her validation from some guy. Who cares?
What are you guys doing tomorrow?
I reckon I might go for a bit of swim.
Oh yeah, I might just go down the river.
Who down the river?
I got some pot here. Do you want to try some?
No, thanks.
You sure?
Yes.
And you?
No, my mom's picking me up from the party. I don't think it'd be a very good look.
She might know.
Yeah, she will.
You?
Oh, I want to be an actor. How are
can't
I
wait.
Mind if I'm a
stoner?
You're lost.
I'm not getting involved with that.
This is just like so, but all these like cuts, like
so.
Hey, ladies, do you want to smoke some weed with me?
No, thanks. I don't smell like costume
makeup. Hey, what about you, pretty lady?
I didn't spend all my time doing makeup to look this good to go at home looking like crap. No, man, I kissed a smoker once. It tastes like an ashtray of sugar, right?
Oh, okay.
One
of
these,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks like that. G'day, boys, how are you?
We finally got a g'day.
Talking to girls. Do you want a bit of confidence? No way. Well, how about you? No, thanks. I might need my little friend downstairs for later. No, thanks. I don't want to end up like you. What's wrong with me? Why? Why?
A career in sales can be challenging.
That's where Swan Hill is the school where they were doing the video.
How much? How about you?
Oh, you found it. Oh, that's amazing.
In Victoria.
Playground. Sounds interesting. Tell me more.
I believe you took notice again of that lingerie billboard on your drive into work today.
Have a whole lot
told
going
yourself
on there.
You weren't going to, but you did. Made you look.
Oh, good to see you.
Shut the hell up.
Remember the billboard? What was that web address?
I've got dinner ready.
Honey, I'm sorry. I need to go up and check my email. Mr. Ramos was going to shoot a report over and I really need it.
Let me explain.
A little harmless fun won't hurt anyone.
You don't think anybody will notice?
Who's going to care?
No, man.
Yes? You're free to do whatever you want.
Do you want to try some awesome stuff? Want to give it a go?
Nah, I don't like drugs, mate. I want a new car, mate.
Okay.
Saying no to drugs will save you money, time, and problems down the track. Set a good example for your friends and your family and live the life you want. Like Rodney here, who realizes that drugs could get in the way of his future and in the way of a green car.
Wrong.
Oh, you want some weed, man? I don't need that stuff. I play video games to escape my reality.
I don't play that game.
Playing another go? Sure. Thanks.
Bullshit.
Look at the guy who doesn't just down the field with cows. Is this just like I...
It's Australia.
How are you, mate?
I don't know if anybody's...
Cows. Thanks, mate.
I thought the cows were going to be up for drugs or something.
No, mate. What if something goes wrong, who will... But my cows.
Yeah.
My cows can have some as well.
Your cows can have some as well.
Come on. Don't bullshit me.
Fine.
great.
Do you ever think of your great friends, mates, parents, brothers, sisters?
Well, no.
If you get tied up in the drug trade, it's going to be bad news for them and probably you. You can make a choice.
Stop whining.
I won't walk away from my friends and my family, but I will walk away from drugs.
Fuck you.
Yeah, Australian anti-drug propaganda, and you found where they were, and they were just down in some little corner in the southeast of the country or something.
Yeah, it's a little place called Swan Hill.
Sounds
and
nice.
It's in Victoria, and, which is where, I'm trying to think of like what's the, there's about 9,000 people there, and I'm just trying to think what's a big city that's close to it. I don't know, it's literally like in the middle of nowhere.
Can you zoom out a little more so I can see like where in Australia? Oh, in the south.
Like maybe how far from Melbourne? Let's see. It's about 3-4 hours from Melbourne.
Okay. Well, it's a big country, so yeah, there's cities scattered out there. Yeah, way out in the country there for sure, right?
Yeah. He's alive!
Edward Snowden here.
They hurt our economy, they hurt our country, they limit our ability to speak and think and live and be creative, to have relationships, to associate freely. And they're going, this doesn't make us more safe, it makes us less safe, it puts us at risk of coming into conflict with our own government.
Yes.
And there's a far cry between legal programs, legitimate spying, legitimate law enforcement, where it's targeted, it's based on reasonable suspicion, individualized suspicion, and a warranted action, and sort of dragnet mass surveillance thing. Entire populations under sort of an eye.
So you, what do you think of that website Glassdoor?
Well, I was doing some research on it, and it's a bunch of Expedia and Hotwire exes, basically. What are those called? Expatriates or something, or what's the
ex-employees?
Ex-employees, yeah. And it's really funny. Like, I don't know that the Valley has changed all that much. You know,
probably not.
But, you know, you look at these founder pages, and it's a bunch of guys that went to Stanford, Berkeley,
sure.
Harvard. You know, you throw in a...
usual suspects.
You know, a random school here and there, but you've heard of them all. And they're all white, and they're all in their early 40s, I want to say. And it's... I mean, there's a token woman. You know, the one at Glassdoor happens to be the... basically the chief human resources officer / legal, so they stick her with two jobs. But everybody's white, and everybody went to this certain kind of pedigree of school, and it's, to me, I just wonder where the diversity is. I wonder what schools are doing, what companies are doing to build that diversity. And I'm not saying it from a, you know, we must have diversity. I'm just honestly curious.
What do you think? Yeah, I know it's a good question, but I think there's a certain amount of insularity. I've even heard just rumors that Google has realized they have to widen their view of the kind of person that would be good at their company. It isn't always just a matter of looking at where someone's degree is from, although that does factor in. In terms of their business model, like, or what they do, the website, like, what exactly do they do?
Their idea is, you know, just like with the travel industry, you know, these people kind of opened up, you know, information that was, you know, not available to people, and they're doing the same thing now with I guess, company information in the sense of, like, you know, what if somebody took the employee survey results and posted them on the web? So that was kind of the Silicon Valley spark question, you know, like, right?
That's a good term. I like it.
What if the fill in the blank had the fill in the blank? That's how our company got started, you know, and a lot of them start that way. So they've got some really good SEO, you know, they've got a lot of content on there, and they have user-generated content.
So people type something in, like, working at General Electric, and they'll be one of the first 10 or 20 results in Google because they have good SEO. So when people are trying to learn about, maybe even higher, because when people, for a lot of companies anyway, because people are trying to learn about what it's like to work at a company, that's one of the sites that bills itself as a place to go for information.
Yeah, and it's a good idea. You know, they offer salaries, they offer employer reviews, they offer information about the interview process, what kind of questions do they ask, how long did it take. And then as an employer, you know, you have your page, and then, you know, you can obviously pay them thousands of dollars a year to get, you know, data and analytics and insights, and they've got a lot of tracking on the site, where you've been, where you're going, what you're looking at, what you're clicking on. You can, you know, list all your jobs available. So it's an interesting concept, but it kind of just seems like this way to, like, kind of trick employers in a sense, like, well, now that we've got, you know, the place where everybody's coming to find out about us, we're now going to make you pay to, you know, do certain things, you know. And I think you can respond to posts, you know, especially negative ones, as an employer for free. But just getting this data and analytics, and, you know, using it for recruiting, I guess. And I think that's a big thing for the HR professionals. You know, getting the right people in and making sure that you fit the culture. And in the position that I'm in, you know, I did a lot with, you know, talking about our brand. But I just thought it was sort of a, if this it's been around for about 5 years, but if it gets big enough and strong enough, you know, there's a point where as a company you might just say, all right, we better have something up there, or our competitors are up there, so we might as well, you know, do something. And I just thought that was a kind of an interesting business decision that, you know, there's all these new sites and places coming up that you might not even think about as a business that now you've got to consider budget for, or how it affects your strategy. Because the marketplace is constantly changing, especially with technology. Things are constantly coming up left, right, and center.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of real and imagined problems with recruiting and employment, you know, like, for sure. You know, it's strange, you know, you hear a lot of stuff, but the people that say that they can't find, you know, the right person, like, you know, that's mostly a myth. That skills gap is a myth.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of people that are qualified for stuff, but, you know, companies are reluctant to hire. And I think you've seen that, right? Companies just don't want to budget hiring. They probably tell reporters that they want to hire, but they can't find people, or tax policy or some bullshit reason like that. But the real reason is they don't have the money to hire because the way the economy's going.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody's really big on contractors, you know?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. In fact, a lot of times what's done in practice is illegal, because the way that people are treated is they're actually essentially treated with the expectations of employees. Like, if you're a contractor, you should be able to come and go and just get the job done, right? It isn't really about, you know what I mean, like 9 to 5 hours or whatever. It's about getting work done, and yet most contractors are expected to show up at the company at the time that salaried employees are working, right? At a lot of types of companies. That's bullshit, because that's not actually under a lot of states' labor laws. You're supposed to be able to come and go as you need to, and just get, as long as you get the work done.
Yeah, and
if you're a contractor.
Yeah, and I think the idea of a contractor is, look, we've got a project with a start date and an end date. We need a certain type of skill that we don't have. We need to, you know, bring it in right now, and when we're done, we're done. Versus, let's bring them on and then kind of treat them like an employee, but then not. But then, you know, they're here for 2 years and maybe we'll make them an offer. You know, and I get it. I mean, there's no fault in looking at your contractor base.
But that's unethical.
Base. Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, I think you do have to find a company culture that you fit. You know, I think eventually that is the breaking point. There's a honeymoon period, and you know you're getting in and you're getting to know the place and how things work and figuring out the politics and figuring out your team or your manager or your whatever. Okay, I know the lay of the land, and then you start to do some stuff and then you just realize, like, you know, is this the kind of place where people walk around looking at their, you know, I wanted to say Blackberries, but I guess everybody's got iPhones now in corporate America. But, you know, are they constantly on that? Are they, you know, do they clear out at 5 o'clock on Friday? Do they go out for happy hour drinks? You know, do they, you know, believe in their vision and their mission and their values and whatever else?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or is it just like, you know, I've worked at companies.
Or what percentage of people, how likely are people to believe? Because not everybody's going to be on board in any place, and not every place can have nobody on board. But, like, yeah, what percentage of people? How many people are buying into what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked at places where, you know, like, I was in, I don't know, two, 3 years, and then somebody put up the mission statement, and I was like, oh, we have a mission statement?
That's yeah,
the
first this time place I've doesn't seem it. To have much of a mission up to now, and
yeah.
All of a sudden you're saying, oh, yeah, you know, that there's this, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, so places like Glassdoor, you know, I mean, it's a good idea. I guess I wonder what the benefits are for the people that post. I mean, I get the venters, right? Because they're pissed off, and now they're like, sweet, this is like, you know, the ultimate, you know, Facebook page post on a company's wall, and they won't know who I am because I can stay anonymous.
They allow accounts that are actually anonymous, or do a lot of people just give bullshit names? Like,
everybody is anonymous when they're giving reviews, I believe. I don't know that you have the option to even say
I
your
see
name.
That. Well, that's a good piece of information about the site. Now
yeah.
Look at the site. You know, like, I feel like that's kind of key. Yeah.
And then, you know, part of the strategy is, you know, find employees that you think are good champions of your culture and go to them and say, hey, we have a Glassdoor site, and if, you know, if you would like to, you know, leave a review, we'd love to see that, and leave it at that, you know, and pick people strategically so that, you know, you let employees know that it's there and encourage them to write. Not, you know, don't offer them Starbucks gift cards and don't, you know, send out a blast
not
email.
Sure,
and
I'm not sure how wrong
reviews.
It would really even be to do that. I mean, to actually, I mean, it just, it all seems like it's rigged on some level. Maybe I shouldn't think that way. Maybe, because I don't know. But I'm guessing, you know what I mean? Like, companies can pay to have what, like, you talk about analytics, but it's kind of like they kind of pay to become insiders on the site. Like it's at offer. Whereas the people that sign up to leave reviews, am I right in guessing that that's free? It's free
yes.
to leave reviews. So it's a user generated content site where the customer is the companies. At least those companies that pay, right, for the extra information, because and the content creators are the employees or former employees.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, people say things like, you know, advice to senior management, you know, this governance, reporting, and communication should be run by someone who actually can spell and use Word at a professional level. Understands Excel and producing metric diagrams via automated applications instead of hand cut and paste, and the errors prone to human interventions in reporting. And understands that governance is not just reporting on problems and golf clapping a vendor for doing their job. And you know what? I have to say, the higher you get, the more puzzling it is how much the executives don't know about things.
Well, yeah, there's the whole principal agent problem, and then there's just I think that there's a lot of politics, and, you know, I mean, the Americans have this image of the American economic system as rigorously capitalist, even though we have a highly socialist system in terms of, I mean, not even so much in terms of benefits, to some extent in terms of, like, you know, the programs like Medicare and Social Security, but also, at least until recently, we had massive government subsidy on the housing market. We still do for the banks, for the financial system, right? I mean, we're a very socialist country. We're a very interventionist country. And there's a lot of, you know, companies too. I think it's gotten its way into American life. I'm not sure we were ever really that dynamic. But there's a kind of institutional, corporate, like bureaucratic mediocrity that's really just very common at all corporate levels.
Yeah.
And in fact, bland people at some companies are more likely to move up, you know? It's not necessarily that they're stupid, but it's that they're bland and inoffensive that maybe got them, you know, up the few levels, or maybe just their connections or whatever.
Yeah, and, you know, they've got advertising on the site, too. So, you know, that's the way that they can make some money with that, I'm guessing, you know, trying to find ways of, to see what kind of ads they have. They've got some spotlight companies, you know, pretty well integrated, you know, social, Facebook, follow us on Facebook, you know, you can do a lot with the strategy. You can integrate it in, have people say, you know, like my page on Facebook, especially if, you know, you're kind of interested in a job, but you want to follow them for a while and get a feel for them and their culture and everything.
For
so
sure.
That's Glassdoor. And we'll be right back. This is podcast number 116, Taken Over by the Cat.
That's right.
What is the official name? You should say the official name.
Oh, PacificPelican.us /64 podcast number 116, as the beautiful lady said. And it has been taken over by cat soundboards. Nice. There we go. We are recording on Tuesday, November 19th, 2013. And, you know, you can find more information at the website, show notes, with a few links, and that type of thing. You know, now got some more crap videos, but it'll actually lead around to, we were talking about employers and stuff, and one of those issues that I think employers are using cynically is Obamacare. They're like,
yeah,
you know, refusing to hire and firing people and stuff, saying it's because of Obamacare. If you're doing that, it's because your business isn't going well. You know what I mean? And there are people that are saying that, using it as an excuse. But before I get around to Obama making, I think, a pretty good case about the insurance cancellation issue, about that, like, I'll just let him speak for himself, because it's one of those where he actually digs into the details, you know, because there's this kind of fake issue about insurance cancellations being a problem when the insurance policies weren't any good. But, and then also, here's, like, one of those zany clips, too.
I'm going to talk to you about the country you live in. You know, Americans are proud of their country. You know, one of the things I try to tell people, you know, really, we did not invent patriotism, but we perfected. Okay? We really did. We have got a flag that we can be proud of. You know, I'm serious. I have to laugh when I see some countries, you know, they wave their flag like they're doing something and like they got something to be proud of, and they have nothing to be proud of. And what's happened is, because Americans love their country, all these other countries say, oh yeah, we have to love our country. When we love our country, we can start talking today about what it's great and be talking for a week. And those guys go, well, our country's great. Our country's great because, well, our country's great. No, it's not. But this one is. And this is a great country, Americans. You know, I don't care, guys. Look, I told you, I like football. I'm not that sold on or sold out to the sports idea.
Don't be ridiculous.
But I don't care if it's a baseball game or a football game. You watch those Americans, brother, when they sing that national anthem. I don't care if it's this guy that looks like he, you know, a leftover hippie from the 60s. With a beer belly out in front of him, when they play that national anthem,
good.
Americans love this nation as a whole. I'm talking about the lost love this country and the saved lost this country. Love this country. And so I'm going to talk to you about the country. The first thing I'm going to say about our country,
this you, is asshole.
The best country in the history of the world. All right? Please understand, I am not trying to hip check Israel out of the picture. I do not believe that Israel was God's chosen people and no longer are. I believe Israel is God's chosen people today. I think that as the time of the Gentiles winds down, we're going to see God bless Israel again. God's going to use Israel again.
But there has never
been a country like this one right here. There has never been a nation that has been good to every nation on the face of this earth.
Don't be ridiculous.
Okay, I'm trying to fix it, and as I said, I guess last week, and I will repeat,
that's something I deeply regret because it's scary getting a cancellation notice. Now, it is important to understand that out of that population, typically, there is constant churn in that market. Yeah, this market is not very stable and reliable for people. So people have a lot of complaints when they're in that marketplace. As long as you're healthy, things seem to be going pretty good. And so a lot of people think, I've got pretty good insurance, until they get sick, and then suddenly they look at the fine print and they've got a $50,000 out-of-pocket expense that they can't pay. We know that on average, over the last decade, each year, premiums in that individual market would go up an average of 15% a year.
It's a joke!
I know that because when we were talking about healthcare reform, one of the complaints was, I bought healthcare in the individual market, and I just got a notice from the insurer. They dropped me after I had an illness, or my premiums skyrocketed by 20 or 30%. Why aren't we doing something about this? So part of what our goal has been is to make sure that that individual market is stable and fair and has the kind of consumer protections that make sure that people don't get a rude surprise when they really need health insurance. But if you just got a cancellation notice, and so far you're thinking my prices are pretty good, you haven't been sick, and it fits your budget, and now you get this notice, you're going to be worried about it. And if the insurer's saying the reason you're getting this notice is because of the Affordable Care Act, then you're going to be understandably aggravated about it. Now, for a big portion of those people, the truth is they might have gotten a notice saying, we're jacking up your rates by 30%. They might have said, from here on out, we're not going to cover X, Y, and Z illnesses. We're changing the policy, because these were all 12-month...
Outrageous, and I will repeal it.
...under no obligation to renew the exact same policies that you had before. But, look, one of the things I understood when we decided to reform the health insurance market, part of the reason why it hasn't been done before and it's very difficult to do, is that
you need
anything that's going on that's tough in the healthcare market, if you initiated a reform, can be attributed to your law. And so what we want to do is to be able to say to these folks, you know what, the Affordable Care Act is not going to be the reason why insurers have to cancel your plan. Now, what folks may find is the insurance companies may still come back and say, we want to charge you 20% more than we did last year, or we're not going to cover prescription drugs now. But that's in the nature of the market that existed earlier.
Obama.
This is pacificpelican.us/64podcast with me, Dan McKeown, and with Jessica taking over the show and picking the music, which was right there, just Katy Perry with This Is How We Do.
That's right, and when I take over, we play Katy Perry because she's awesome. And she has the same amount of number one singles on one album as Michael Jackson. So take that, music industry.
She's definitely been a very big success in the industry. And, you know, I'm not sure on this, you know, like, I think in terms of, like, the producers, the songwriters, like, she's hooked up with, like, the really big, you know, songwriters that write for her and some other big artists, right, like Rihanna. So they kind of have, like, a assembly line of hit songs, like, you know, between their popularity and their all the different, like, production teams and stuff they work with.
Yeah, and I think she writes a lot of her songs, but, I mean, which I think is really cool. You know, and I don't know, she's just fun. We saw her in concert, and she's just out to make people smile and have a good time, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, look, there's Kevin Sorbo explaining the disappointed meme.
Oh, there's actually a video of him talking about it, or there's just him saying it?
Well, it says Kevin Sorbo disappointed meaning. He explains the meaning behind the YouTube viral video.
Oh, somebody's vertical video, 1 minute 28 seconds long. All right, well, let's... Well, that's an unknown quantity. We can try that. So let's... we'll bring it around... all right, let's do that now, because I was just going to drop that clip on top of the other clip I was playing, so I can still do that here. Let's see what this vertical video-taking cretin captured.
It's so funny. This character I played, so I wish we did more from songs. He's like the alter ego of Ricky's putting on the really cool clothes and stuff. He's a bad guy. And there's a line in there where things aren't going his way, and he yells, "Disappointed!"
Let me explain.
And people are saying, you know what happened? In the script, it had parentheses. He's supposed to be disappointed and play the line disappointed. It was my ode to Kevin Klein. Is it Klein? Yeah. Fish called one. I love the fish called one. And when he yells up disappointed, that's what that was from. He was yelling up disappointed. It's just funny to see people's response. I asked that aloud at his convention. And it's just so funny how things get, you know, the stories that come out of them.
Well, it looks like...
Yeah. Jimmy Kimmel fans are not quite ready to accept that their hero is no longer playing in the NFL. I'm Jim Baskell with the latest ESPN headlines. This time it isn't just a casual fan, but a golf pro who wonders why the hometown Jacksonville Jaguars will not give Tebow a shot. Dewey Arnett has worked with the likes of Patrick Harrington and Darren Clark, but his focus these days is on the gridiron, which is why he bought an ad in Monday's edition of the Florida Times-Union. Darren Rovell covers sports business for ESPN and joins us with more. Darren, why did you spend $1,200 for this ad?
This isn't my world.
He kind of told me that he's not the kind of guy But over the past 6 weeks, he's a Jacksonville resident and just kind of got into it. And some of his contacts suggested that... who had known NFL players, spoke to NFL players, that Tim Tebow was better than people thought he was, or deserved more credit, and that he's more serviceable and can potentially lead to some wins for the 1-9 Jaguars. So
no, it is not true.
He put his money where his mouth is and did a whole bunch of stuff, including some billboards, some planes with banners on it, radio ads on three radio stations, and just did this ad. And we didn't know, and he didn't reveal himself until we asked the ad department, who is this? And then today he just said, hey, this is me behind all this stuff.
I want to be the people's governor.
So Tim Tebow can't get a job.
The NFL Doesn't seem to have a team that wants to hire him right now. Doesn't mean he might not make his way onto a team by the end of the year or next year, but he may not also. So some hometown people, you know, are spending money on billboards and propaganda to get him on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, despite the awesome name, they are not doing well as a football team. You know, they're mentioning that. So they have a bad record. So, you know, it is kind of a, like, early in the season, there was the Jaguars, aren't going to be a very good football team. Why not hire Tim Tebow? Have him play tight end or have him play quarterback, whatever. And then he tried out for the Patriots. So he was in their camp, Tebow was, but then he got cut. And so, you know, anyway, the season goes on. The Jaguars are predictably bad. So now the argument from some Jaguars fans is, well, the team's bad anyway, so why don't you have a hometown, you know, icon out there on the field? Because University of Florida, you know, is in Gainesville.
Yeah.
That's up there in Florida a bit, you know, up north a bit. So Jacksonville's there on the Atlantic Coast. So, yeah, so the attendance hasn't been very high at that team's games in Jacksonville. I mean, Florida is a pretty big state these days, right? But Jacksonville isn't. You know, probably it's among the smaller markets for NFL teams, you know, and I think like Cleveland, you know, here is also in a smaller market, but because you're thinking about a lot of these teams, you know, they have like large territories to themselves, like the Broncos have Denver and then all, you know, all that area around, and then like the Seahawks have Seattle, you know, like there's some pretty big cities that have one team, and then cities like New York have like two, so. You think about Jacksonville, it's hard to whip up enough interest. You know, and Florida just doesn't seem to have very good pro sports fans. I mean, very consistent attending sports fans. You know, you always see the Tampa Bay Rays stadium. Despite the good teams, they don't fill up the stadium that much. I think the Rays may have had worse attendance than the Marlins, who were terrible. I mean, but, you know, you're talking about low attendance for a good team, and then the Marlins is low attendance for a bad team. But still, you know, it's like Miami Dolphins, they have an old, outdated stadium. They don't really, I don't know that they fill that up. I'm not really sure. You know, like, is it one of those things about people being outdoors or something? Because I think we thought, when we were in California, you know, we live in San Francisco, I would say we thought the intensity about sports is less, wouldn't you say, like in San Francisco than in like, I mean, that's a very broad generalization, but definitely college football, the big game, Cal, Stanford, I mean, that's just not the same intensity as, like, a Michigan State game or something, I don't think. Like, I think the Midwest, like, the college fans are very, it's a little different, it's a little more intense, and then, like, there are some pretty dedicated pro fans, like the Raider Nation, but it's, like, this subset. It's not like the whole city pays attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a better point. You know, I think when it comes to sports fans, I would say in the Bay Area, and especially the big game, I mean, people get riled up and people turn out. But on a scale of like 1 to 10, you know, the big game is maybe like a 7, and Michigan State is like a 10.
So, yeah, Auburn, Alabama would definitely be a 10. Like, it's not the kind of intensity of those types.
I mean, the stadiums are still packed. But, you know, some students might be like, oh, what, football? Whereas, you know, in other schools, everybody knows that, you know, there's football going on that day, that weekend, whatever, you know. And I think there's a lot more tailgating in the Midwest.
People spend more time at the games. Like, I think people will show up to the stadium and go to the game on the West Coast. But there's the whole parking lot scene, and they really cater to that. Like, the Raiders, a lot of people take transit, or they just park and walk to the stadium and all that. But, I mean, you can get a beer at the stadium or whatever, right? But it's like, whereas, like, a lot of places, they cater to being able to park and tailgate. They certainly, right, they have the municipal lot and the other lot at the Browns Stadium. I've never even been to a Browns game, you know.
Me either. Nor do I really want to go.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm a bigger fan of college football than pro football. So, you know, I haven't gone to some Michigan State games and stuff, like, and, you know, like, a, whatever, like, a, that's cool for me.
I would like to go to a Michigan State basketball game, though. I
haven't been to one. Oh, yeah. Yet. You know, I've only been to one ever myself because, you know, tickets are definitely hard to get. You can imagine when I was on campus, a school of, like, 45,000 people, and then a lot of, like, fans in the region wanting to show up, too. You know, you're talking about 2000 national champions, right? So that was while I was at the school, so.
And they're number one right now.
Yeah, yeah. Michigan State's having a really strong year.
Woo! They're 4-0.
Beat Kentucky. They beat the top recruiting class ever or whatever in the form of the Kentucky freshman.
Yeah, it was a good game. It got me a little, you know, kind of like, oh.
Well, Kentucky came back and tied it, but then Michigan State got the lead back again.
Portland taking on the new number one team of the nation, Michigan State. Picking up in the first half, Sparty up by 4 in transition.
Sparty.
Brandon Dawson.
There they are, calling him Sparty.
Adrian Payne, the oop. Yep. 19.7 boards, but Portland would actually take the lead in this one later in the first after this Vladimir Garum tip-in right there. Portland
no.
32-31. So later, Michigan State up by 1. Payne, missing that put-back jam, but Keith Appling. Drilling the three at a game high 25 points. So second half, Portland down by 3. Bryce Presley finds Ryan Nicholas for the easy lay-in. Portland down by 1. Later in the second, Spartans lead by 8. Appling double-teamed. Gonna find Matt Costello all alone for the jam. Michigan State up 64-54. Later in the second, Payne drives through the basket. Finds a wide-open Dawson for the splash. Michigan State wins it, 82-67.
That's good shit.
These are really long soundboards.
You know, that's a real flaw of a lot of soundboards. You just want to stop, like, after a while. You know, like, you can't use 30-second clips as, like, drops in your, like, you know, podcast. It doesn't work. I mean, unless you just want to sit and wait for a while.
Yeah. Tila Tequila. She's blonde now, and I'm a brunette.
Yeah, your hair looks really nice. You got a nice dark hair now.
Like a panther.
Hi everyone. Wow, it's been a while since I've done this. Welcome to Tila Talks. What is it, 3 or 4? 3? I don't know. But welcome to Tila Talks, and it's been a while. It's been a lot of stuff going on and a lot of changes happening. I'm sure y'all can feel it. Lots of energies, and there's going to be even more to come, actually. Oh, October was really crazy. We're in November now, and all these energies you guys feel, it's going to amplify quite a bit more. So hang in there, and I know there's a lot of people out there who are afraid of what's coming, and there are those of us who are ready for it. That's what we're here for. That's what we came here at this time to do. And some of us remember and some of us may not, but that's okay. That's the whole point of waking up. So,
like an animal.
With that being said, I personally think that there's really nothing to be afraid of. It's just basically, if you have so much fear and so much fear of death, then in a way, that's what you're going to manifest. I'm not trying to be like a fear monger here, but really, it's all about the energy. So if you have a certain belief system,
I use my
and
plan.
You just can't let it go, and you think you're,
I will do the people's work, and I will take responsibility
so
and be accountable to you.
You believe you're going to hell. Well, unfortunately, I hate to be the one to break this to you, but that's most likely where you're going to go. However,
what the fuck did I do wrong?
What this whole ascension thing is, because this is actually the last time that the Earth is ascending in this phase. This is the last time that we're all going to be here experiencing 3D Earth. I know it probably sounds really crazy, but if you follow my blogs, anonymoustruthblog.com, or follow me on my Facebook, I explain these type of things like on a daily basis, and I think I do a way better job when I'm just typing, because when I'm talking, I'm just like, ooh, okay, must be the blonde.
What's the matter?
No, but really, there's nothing to be afraid of, really. All it is that there's so much stuff that's messed up on the Earth and the planet right now, and it's just so, they've done too much damage to the point where the point of no return, so there's no reversing what they did, and the only thing we can do now is to, basically, we're getting rid of the parasites, okay? The parasites are the ones who, well, you know what the parasites are. And that's all it is, and right now we're just a cleanup process, I call it, as we're transitioning.
Sorry, what?
And that's all it is, really. And the soul never really dies. I mean, for people who think that they're going to die, they're afraid of death. Well, you're made of energy, and that's what your soul is also. And
what's
energy,
the point in arguing?
Make energy die, really. You just, the energy just transports somewhere else. Now, for the ones who are the destroyers of this planet, or the aliens, the bad ones, whatever.
For details on how to register and get absentee ballots, go to our website.
So what do you think? She's kind of going in more of a New Age mystic kind of direction.
Yeah.
She was doing more of the kind of Illuminati kind of conspiracy kind of stuff earlier.
Yeah, well, I wonder what happened. Now, I wonder if she was just like, I better keep it quiet.
Maybe it's all in the same continuum in some way, or maybe she thinks it is.
That's true. She is kind of an interesting character.
I can say this. I can't prove it, so I won't say it. But I think I would probably be safe to say there is not a nation on this earth that has not benefited in some way by this country right here.
No, it is not true.
Even the nations that hate us. You know, I remember a few years ago, Russia was small-time stuff.
Wrong.
As far as communism, as compared to Albania. Albania was one of the staunchest. It was almost like the Nazis were in Germany. Albania is one of the most close-watched communist countries in the world. And when Albania had an earthquake, who helped them?
Tebow.
And every place you turn, the Tebow has helped the nation.
Stop whining.
I was talking to a fellow.
So, did you hear about the MI6 spy who was found dead a few years ago inside a bag? He was locked inside a bag. And now Scotland Yard wants people to believe that he wasn't murdered.
Oh my gosh, come on now.
Look, this is what they're telling to the British people. Look at the MI6 spy who was found dead in a bag. There, the Scotland Yard, despite a coroner or somebody making a different conclusion, Scotland Yard is claiming that he probably locked himself in a bag and died as a tragic accident. I'm just saying, this is the kind of shit they try to put by the British people. I don't know what, I mean, they don't have a First Amendment there. They don't have, like, some of the protections, you know, so they can openly censor things instead of, you know, kind of find ways to do it, you know, in an underhand way or through corporate censorship. But in Britain, it's a straightforward right of the government, of the sovereign, to just, you know, impose restrictions on speech, including, you know, not letting leaks be published? Like, there, you know, it's very hard to publish any leaks, even though here now we're facing this war on whistleblowers and this war on journalism. You know that James Risen, the New York Times reporter who's done all this intelligence reporting, this Bush-era lawsuit where they're trying to basically throw him in jail for reporting, like, is just dragging on and on still. Like, I played a clip of him a handful of podcasts ago where he was talking about how it's getting old. He was the guy that's saying that it's getting old, that they keep saying that when there's intelligence leaks, it hurts people in the field. And he was the one saying it's getting old because there's no proof of any of that. And they always they try to throw that around about WikiLeaks, and they say, well, it compromised people in the field, or it got people killed. And that's not true. It's one of those, like, claims. It's like, well, there's no proof of that. It's just an assertion that was propagandistically thrown around, you know, like.
Yeah.
So, more in the area of propaganda. There was a guy who hacked Stratfor. It was this, like, strategic consulting firm. They basically, they're a private intelligence agency. He hacked their servers, and it led to, eventually, the information being released as the global intelligence files by WikiLeaks. And Jeremy Hammond is the guy who was just recently sentenced to 10 years in prison.
Oh my gosh.
So he is now associated with Anonymous. Now here's another, like, angle to it. Here's a twist, sort of. Sabu, the guy who is, I don't know, he has, like, his name has been revealed. He's been in, like, a federal asset for, like, years now. Like, Jeremy Hammond is claiming that the guy, Xavier or something, tricked him into hacking other countries and all sorts of targets at the instigation of the FBI. See, this guy was a hacker, and he considered himself, I don't know, a hacktivist. He did, you know, he was involved in nonviolent resistance stuff. Like, he considered himself an activist online and offline, and he got kind of pulled in to hacking these certain kinds of places. He got put up to it by the guy who was the supposed leader of that group that was vaguely associated with Anonymous, LOLSEC.
Yeah.
And that guy that was known as Sabu, whose name is Hector Xavier Monsager, he was already working for the FBI.
Yeah.
See, so when Jeremy Hammond was hacking, and here's the thing, one of the things Jeremy Hammond did that landed him in trouble is he managed to get credit cards in this hack. I think it was part of the Stratfor hack, and he urged people to use the credit cards to donate to charities. Now, it sounds like a good idea, but it's definitely not. It's not ethical. Even if you believe in the charities, I don't think it's ethical. And then what happened is, I think that some of that money got charged back on the credit cards, and the charities didn't get the donations they thought they were getting. So, I mean, it's bad news. It's sort of being, he tried to compare himself to Aaron Swartz, who killed himself earlier this year and was being prosecuted, I think, under similar charges.
Yeah.
So, what, you know, it comes down to is, like, how much of this hacking and how much of this stuff is actually just being done by the feds, by the FBI? Like, you know, when the FBI manages to figure out who one of the leaders of LOLSEC is and finds that guy, why do they then tell him to go put up other people to more hacks? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why don't they arrest him and charge him? Why don't they? I mean, would it take, you know, maybe one or two setups and they could roll up his associates, but, you know, with some proof or whatever. But why have these operations that go on, and they take over these illegal websites and they claim they're there to bust them, but they tend to operate them for a while. And you just wonder, like, what are they doing?
I think just intelligence.
But why? They've admitted that there were months and months where this Monsignor guy was still acting as the head of LulzSec, but he was basically working for the FBI.
Mm.
Why do they continue the activities of LulzSec, you know, instead of just shutting it down? If it's such a negative thing, and then they end up charging all these people that are involved, you know, why does the FBI operate it? And did they really get to him when they say they did? How far back does that association really go? Now that we're asking questions, and you know, I mean, look at the FBI. Like they murdered that guy in Florida recently, and it turns out that they investigate their shootings and they always let people off. You know, I FBI is very dangerous. Like they basically seem to have immunity from murder charges.
Yeah.
Because they investigate their own shootings, local departments tend to stay out, and they always. They always decide that the officers, the agent was vindicated in shooting. I mean, that's sort of a separate issue, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's some pretty sinister shit going on, some pretty sinister tactics. I'm just saying, how involved are they in the criminality, in the child porn world, in the world of hacking, and all the international hacking going on? How much of that is being done? You know, like, how much of this is just a show? How much of this is bullshit just being instigated by the government? You know, like, there's so many so-called terror plots where it's just FBI agents putting people up. You know, putting just mostly mentally ill and vaguely morally deficient dumbasses up to the idea. Like, the Bridge case in Ohio, they found some dumbasses that were, like, willing to say they would blow up a bridge, but they didn't have any explosive knowledge, and they didn't bring anything to the table other than their stupid asses to espouse the view of the bridge and a fake rigged-up cell phone so that they could just record that they were willing to try to blow the bridge up. And they make that a federal terrorism case?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just wanted a scapegoat or an example.
They're creating crime. They're creating crime all over the place. So I'm just wondering how much of this hacking stuff is being done by them as, like, you know, as either their own criminal type of activity or some sort of distraction or cover for, you know, something else.
That's a good point.
Well, thank you very much to Jessica for your takeover of the podcast, and I guess you'll let me know whether I take it back over or if you're gonna continue to take it over. But this has been a very cool episode, number 116.
Yeah! I did it once and I'll do it again.
You've been so good, I want to give you a treat.